Okay, so our goal today is to explore the implications of the fascinating words of the Ran. The Ran, both here and in Maseches Megillah, got a chance to see a little bit, and it is relevant to a lot of things. And we're going to get super triple synergy word scores for today, because there is a lot in particular that happens to be relevant right now that connects. If you try to find a parsha connection, it would be even better. But there's enough to work with this Ran. That this Ran, first of all, what we'll see is that it goes to principles of Kol Torah Kula, rules of Sveikos, and that it connects deeply to the question of how do we understand Dinim Darabanan, which has been a major topic throughout the year, especially in the earlier part of the year. And that's going to be important for us. Through that, it will bring us back into the first parak, just almost exactly at the point where we left off back in the first semester, so we get extra synergy for that. We're connecting this parak with the first parak. It also connects us very much to Purim. So it's very timely from that perspective, as we'll see. And we will explore approaches to the Ran that are general and some that really draw on specific Purim points. So hopefully we'll be able to appreciate it from both directions. Its relevance to Kol Torah Kula, but also it'll allow us to focus our attention towards Purim a little bit. And we'll see also that, maybe you got a chance to see some of the sources that pointed in this direction, it's also relevant to the upcoming Shemitah year. And if there is an upcoming Shemitah year, which is part of the discussion, as we'll see. So basically, we have synergy coming from a lot of directions. We're going to talk about the 10th Parak of Pesachim, 1st Parak of Pesachim, Purim, and Shemitah. So hopefully that will bring things together in a meaningful way for us. And, of course, Kol Torah Kula, and in specific, Dinim Darabanan, all of that also. So this is a major topic, major Shas Sugya. So let's see how far we can go today with this. So first of all, we should look at the Ran together, because it's instructive just to pay attention not only to what he says, but to how he phrases it. And as you know, the Ran is discussing our Sugya of Heseba, and the fact that the Gemara on our daf of Kuvches Amud Aleph, the Gemara expressed a question as to what exactly should get Heseba within the Dalet Kosos. Now we know that there is a halacha of Heseba for the cups, but we don't know exactly how it applies. And the Gemara quoted Rav Nachman in two different ways. Whether it refers to the first two or refers to the last two. And the Gemara gives an explanation for each one. There's a reason why there's a svara to say the first two and a svara to say the last two. And ultimately the conclusion is, okay, so we don't know, so we'll do Haseba for both. So the Ran comments on that point. This idea that we should do Haseba for both. So comments the Ran, Kaf Chav Gimel Amud Aleph B'Daf Bei Arif, Hashta D'Itmar Hachi V'Itmar Hachi Kulu Bo Haseba, V'Yaf Al Gav D'Ba'Alma Kaimalon Ipcha, D'Chol Sveika D'Rabbanu Makula, Hacha Kevin D'Lav Milsa D'Tirchi Hi Avdina L'Ravavcha D'Milsa. So even though normally we would say the opposite, because of Suffolk to Rabbanan Lakula, here we're going to insist on all of them because it's better and it's not a big deal. That's initially what it sounds like you say. Kach Pirshuzah. That's how other Rishonim have said it. And indeed, if you look at other Rishonim, so that's how it's formulated. But he himself says, "Ran v'limira, dal karchach boy lemabat haseba bekulhu." That you're forced into a situation of doing haseba by all of them. Din Neza Lakula Amai Neko Bahani Tfe Mehani. That if we're going to say, let's just pick one, why should we do one rather than the other? Din Akil B'Trevayhu, and if we're going to say, let's do none of them, Ha Mikra Mitzvah Sesei V'Legamer. So you will end up removing Heseva completely. So there's a lot to comment on this Ran before you even see anything else. Right, the Ran would have been interesting without any possible steers. But as you're aware, it's extra interesting because it does seem to also bring him into conflict with what he says elsewhere. But before getting to the elsewheres, so already let's just observe some points about the Ran. So first of all, what's going to be an issue is how does he relate to the first answer? Right, at first he quotes the idea that there's no tircha here, and therefore that's the reason to do it, setting aside whatever we may have felt the past few days about whether doing Heseba and drinking is significant pain or not. But you're saying there's no tircha, there's no expense involved. So, first of all, the relationship of that answer to the second answer, and what does he feel about the first answer? So that's itself something to keep in mind. And another question just to pay attention to when you're reading his words was he starts off commenting on the Gemara, and his opening words are V'afal gav da al ba'alma kaimalan ifcha. Right? That really we would have said the opposite. Because of Sveika Drabbanan Lakul. So what does the opposite mean? What would the opposite conclusion have been? Right? Because we see ultimately he considers a few possibilities. So Jack, do you want to comment on that? What would have been the instinctive opposite? What's the opposite?
Opposite. The absolute opposite would be to do nothing.
Okay, so is that the default? So it's a little unclear, right? I mean, do we know one way or another?
I mean, if you want to say the opposite, I guess.
I guess just because it's the most opposite.
Right.
Right. But he's not really spelling it out. So he's initially saying that because this is a suffix Rabbanan, we would have come to the opposite conclusion of the Gemara. So what is the opposite conclusion? The Gemara says, do a say by all of them. So do a say by none of them? Is that the default? Maybe. But what's interesting to note is that he doesn't address them in that order. Right? So when he says, okay, well, let's consider doing one set or the other. No, there's no svara for that. Well, then let's do none. No, that takes away the takana completely. So that's already interesting, because maybe if he really, the opposite was the default to do none, so then, if we want to be really exacting in his language, probably could have followed a different path and said, okay, no, we can't just do none because that gets rid of the takana completely. Well, if that gets rid of the takana completely, so then fine, let's not get rid of the takana completely, let's do one set. We'll say, no, can't do one set because there's no logic to do one set over the other. So theoretically, could have phrased it that way. So how much to pay attention to the order of the phrasing maybe is somewhat arguable, but the way it's phrased, it sounds like he's saying the default would have been to just do one set. And that was the order in which he addressed it. But also only after first noting the other approach in Rishonim. Now, before going further, what can you observe about the difference between the two approaches? All right.
I mean, doesn't the second answer disagrees with the first one? Because either it says it is a tircha, or it says that tircha is not a consideration in going l'pakel or l'plumra b'fal. And then, according to the first answer, maybe it says that the second answer is problematic if you're not actually being ma'akher, the inyan of the seva and the seder.
Interesting. So, we're assuming that he's basically disagreeing with the first approach, which is an important question, really, we'll see, as to what is the halacha like, because there is a significant difference between the nature of the two approaches. And we'll also see that it probably transcends Dalai Kosos and enters into a lot of other very significant areas of halacha. But if we're assuming they disagree with each other, so what you're saying is a very interesting point. I'm not sure if it's the point that I would have zoomed in on first. But you're saying that his argument is that the first answer assumes that it's not such a tircha, and that's why we don't take an approach of suffix to rabbanon lekula. And his own approach, I will call it that way because the first approach is quoting from other Rishonim, his own approach is that, no, it is a tircha. Listen, he's been listening to the Rav Yah and this whole discussion we've been talking about just how uncomfortable it is and how strange it looks. So it is a tircha, so that wouldn't satisfy him. So it must be there's another reason to do this. So it's an interesting way of phrasing it. I think I could have looked at it from a different way. I think I could have looked at the difference between the two opinions in maybe a more piercing way, because what you're saying, I'm not sure if it's the most apparent approach, but also, so that would keep things pretty local. I was saying that the whole fight here is assuming that these answers are at odds with each other, which they probably are, but that the whole issue is, okay, how much of a tircha is it? How do we assess tircha? Which is a fair question overall, right? Because if that's going to be a principle, that when it comes to suffix or abanam lakula, if it's a tircha, then we should be machmir anyway. So then I'm going to want to know, okay, how do I assess tirchas? And what happens the next time there's an easy kind of situation? So do I compare it to this? Do I not compare it to this? So it's an important question to consider if that's the difference. So then yes, that is definitely something to keep in mind. But it seems like there might be a more fundamental issue, maybe even two more fundamental issues that are at stake here. Anyone want to take a further stab at it? What could maybe be an issue here between these two approaches? Both pretty fundamental. So, one issue could be, there's two different ways maybe at least to frame their machlokas, and both of them would have pretty wide-ranging implications because they both go beyond Dalai Kosos, and they go to the nature of Safek Derabanan Lekula. And what does that klal mean? So here, getting very much into Kol Torah Kula territory. So what is the implication of saying Safek Derabanan Lekula? And even once we zero in on that as the issue, there's still at least two very significant ways to understand the machlokas between the two opinions here. The first is, let's phrase it this way, that according to the first opinion, the other Rishonim, yeah, it's safek d'rabbanan lekula, but come on, it's not a big deal. Right, so you might as well do it. Heyos tov, right, you do the right thing, how hard is it? So that gives us a certain impression about how we relate to Safek Derabanan Lekula in general. So you see what I'm getting at? Yeah, Jack?
Maybe according to the first answer, it's the default is actually Safek Derabanan Lekula.
Uh-huh, interesting.
Just if there's a tier cut to it, that's when we apply like an exception, like, oh, it's a
tier
cut, okay,
so we can run on Kula. Okay, let me build on that. Let me build on that. See, it sounds like, according to the first answer, Safek Derabanan Lekula is essentially what it sounds like. It's basically a leniency. Saying that really it would have been kedai to be machmir on Safek, to be machmir on Sfekos Derabanan Lekula. That really, that's how we would prefer to live. That we should be machmir on all sveikos. But, okay, for whatever reason, we're mekel on the rabbanans. And maybe because of a general attitude that the rabbanans are more lenient than dinim in HaTorah. And they're not as demanding. So if they're not as demanding, okay. If it's a pain, we can give you a break. Or if it's expensive, it's a hefsid merubah, or it's a big tircha, we can let you off. But if it's not such a big deal, we'd rather be machmir. And that would be a very far-reaching idea, right? That it's not, that first answer is not just telling us something about the alakosos. It's a klal, right? It's saying, or it sounds like it would be a klal, right? This is something that can be exported as a Torah policy in general. That if something's not a big deal, even if it's suffix to Rabbanan, we would tell you to be mach. And it's suggesting that Sveika de Rabbanan Lakula is not such an absolute idea. It's basically just a leniency because of a lower level of intensity. So we're a little more chill, essentially. Maybe that's the best way to say it. We're just basically more chill, so okay. We're not going to give you a hard time with that. But if you can, should be mach. And that's what our Gemara is saying. Okay, we don't know, so it's not a big deal, just do it, according to the first answer. While the Ran might then be saying that, no, I'm not satisfied with that. That when it comes to Safek Drabbanan Lakula, it could be that maybe it's something more absolute. That maybe there's a fundamental difference between dinim d'oraisa and dinim d'rabbanan, and there's just no reason to be machmir by a din d'rabbanan and safek. And it's not that we're letting you off easy, it's that there's something fundamentally different about them. And therefore, if we're telling you to be machmir here, it's not just because it's not a tircha. It must be there's something more at stake. So just to flesh that out a little bit, so I don't know if you follow me so far, just to flesh it out a little bit more. One point we discussed earlier in the year, if you recall, is that many achronim maintained that there's a fundamental difference between dinim d'oraisa and dinim d'rabbanan. And that when you're dealing with a dinim in HaTorah, there's something inherent in the issue to what you might call a iser. So if the Torah says don't eat chazer, there's something inherently spiritually dangerous about the chazer. And when it comes to a din d'rabbanan, which by its very nature is a later institution than the Torah, the rabbis are coming in and making a rule that wasn't there before. So that by its very nature, some achronim understood, couldn't redefine an object as spiritually harmful. If a chicken cheeseburger is nisa d'rabbanan, it's not going to become spiritually dangerous all of a sudden because the rabbis came and said, don't eat it. So we would have to characterize it differently. We'd have to understand it as this is a instruction not to rebel against rabbinic rules. So the rabbis say, don't eat a chicken cheeseburger. The reason we don't eat it is because we are respecting rabbinic authority. But the chicken cheeseburger does not take on any dangerous quality. And if that's the case, one could argue that that's why you have a rule of safek d'oraisa l'chumra, safek d'rabbanan l'hakim. That when you're dealing with an issa d'oraisa, which has some kind of spiritual poison in it, so then we should say that if you're not sure, if you think it might contain that spiritual poison, you should stay away because it might have something harmful for you. So even if you're not sure it's there, but it might be there, avoid it. But when it comes to an issa d'rabbanan, it could be that it's all about not rebelling against Chazal. So then it would be fair to say, I'm not rebelling against Chazal if I don't know that I'm doing anything wrong. If I'm eating a definite chicken cheeseburger, so then, okay, I know I'm rebelling against what they told me to do, not to eat the chicken cheeseburger. But if I don't even know, if that's a suffix, if someone tells me there might be some chicken cheeseburger in here, I don't know. So then I'm not rebelling against Chazal, I don't know that I'm doing anything wrong. that's one of many different explanations that are offered for the rule of Suffolk Drabban Alahaka. So if you take a path like that, so you might say, so there's no reason to say Bimachmir because it's a Tircha. They're fundamentally different. It's not just that rabbinic laws are more lenient, so we won't give you a hard time, but it would be nice still to be machmir there too. You could say they're just objectively different. There's no reason to be machmir by a din d'rabbanan. And tircha shouldn't be a factor at all. So if we're being told to be machmir here, it's not because of it's easy, there's no tircha. It must be there's something more fundamental. So perhaps that's the machlokas here. It goes to the whole nature of Suffolk Durabana Lakula. Is Suffolk Durabana Lakula just a leniency? We'll give you a break. But extra points if you're going to be machmir. Or Suffolk Durabana is something fundamental. And it just means they're objectively different. And tircha shouldn't be a factor at all. And therefore, maybe there's something else at play here. Everyone follow me? Make sense? Yeah? Good? Hi?
Is Nisar Gavra always just applied to Darabans, or is Nisar Gavra?
So that's a good question. A lot of this is based on assumptions that some Achronim may not share and some Achronim. So this is just one path within it. It's very possible to argue from either direction. It's very possible to say there are Dinim and HaTorah that are Isarei Gavra. It's very possible to say that Yisurim Drabbanan are also Yisurim Chavtu. So the conversation is a very long one, but this is just one possible approach. And that approach is an example of what may lead you to a conclusion that we're makel by Drabbanans, not because we're chill by Drabbanans, but because they're fundamentally different and the logic leads you in different paths. And Tircha shouldn't be a factor. So if there's a different approach, then maybe it's because there's something more fundamental at play. So that also could be an issue.
Yes, sir? It seems like a few steps compared to saying that it's much more obvious they're going to be machmir because you're going to prove it versus you're not going to fail.
You're saying what's more obvious?
It's much more obvious to say that they're going to prove it and think it's terrible.
So you're saying the second answer.
Thing which technically would come to the conclusion of what Ron says here.
Saying that the Ron could come and say something else.
You said, explain it, but it's much more questions.
Okay, so tell me if the third point about to say, tell me if this is what you're getting at, because maybe this may address your point. Because they could now take this to a different level. Right? So we've had now two levels so far. It could be an issue about is there a tircha here or not, a local question about dalakosos, like Ari was saying. Or it could be a question of how do you understand Suffolk Durabbanan Lakula, the Suffolk Durabbanan Lakula situation where it's kedai to be machmir if possible, or is it a situation where it's not relevant, either it's easy or not. It's just an objective difference between the two. A third approach, which may come out of the second approach, and may address what I think Yassi is asking also, is maybe the machlokis is, when do you say Suffolk Durabbanan Lakula? That according to the first approach, fundamentally, this is a situation of Suffolk Durabbanan Lakula. But because it's easy, you might as well be machmir. While the Ran is saying, maybe more than that, he's saying, no, it's just not Suffolk Durabbanan Lakula. These are not the kind of scenarios where Suffolk Durabbanan Lakula comes in. So, for example, if you're going to totally remove it in, that is not a Suffolk Durabbanan Lakula situation. And that could get to the issue of which answer is more obvious here. Now, what's going to bother us more? So I think if I'm understanding you correctly, is saying that the Ran is essentially saying, don't come at me with tircha, there's a bigger problem. Right? Saying that, oh, that essentially, why would you disagree with the first approach of the Rishonim? So I think if I understand you correctly, we're saying what's more obvious, that what the Ran is basically saying is, don't tell me we're machmir here because it's easy to be machmir. We're machmir here because there's a more fundamental reason to be machmir. That the cost of not being machmir is not just a missing an easy opportunity. It's being ochre din completely. And that's a bigger deal. So that should be your answer first. Is that what you're asking?
I'm not saying it's really different. It's just semantics, whether you established Sabagamakul and then Mahunu, or you don't have it in the first place.
It's not necessarily.
It's more obvious that you should do it, uprooting it in versus just
so. Right, so he's saying, so the fact that
it's seems stronger.
Yeah, because that's why he thinks his answer is better.
Do it first or after.
Yeah, but it goes, it's stronger, but it also goes to what's your fundamental point of disagreement. Now, once you, if you're disagreeing along those lines, then it becomes a more obvious answer. What does it matter?
If you're showing a reason to establish it and then uproot it, then you're going to go by that.
If you're showing
a reason to not have it in the first place, then you're going to go by that.
Okay.
It doesn't matter what the strong reason is, why does it matter?
Because the question is what's driving their disagreement. Because the underlying premise is going to affect which one is more.
It says all profile that you don't need to say it. I'm going to let you.
You can't say to do a seva by all.
It sounds like it's stronger.
Yep. So that's, it sounds like he understands that it's ultimately a better answer. The question is, why is it a better answer? So basically, to sum up, what we see is three possible ways, some of which I think the last two could lead into the other because of where the pressure comes from. But essentially, we have at least three ways maybe to understand this machlokes. That, and assuming that the two answers are really opposed to each other, not just all combining to lead to a conclusion. That either it's a localized question, how do we perceive the tircha involved in Haseba for Dalet Kosos? First answer says not a tircha. Second answer will say it is a tircha, so we need a better approach. Second question of how do we relate to a din of Suffolk or a Banan Lakula? Is that an absolute, and there's no reason to be machmer even if it's easy? Or is it just a leniency, and when it's possible, better to be? Or when do we apply Suffolk Rabbanan Lakula in the first place? Do we apply it in every situation where we're not sure about a din d'rabbanan? Or are there circumstances which may be rooted in rabbinic law, but the nature of the possibilities makes it impossible for that to be a suffix or a banan lakula kind of situation? Okay, so far so good. Everybody with me? Ruben?
Can you explain that a number of different sides as to why one would hold maybe something cooler or not?
Well, it could be that what the Ran is saying is that the rule of suffix or a banan lakula doesn't always apply. We don't have license to be making on every suffix or a banan. That there are certain situations where we're given the right to be lenient because of how the parts interact with each other, but that's not necessarily always true. So, just for example, we're going to have to expand on this a lot when we see some of the other possibilities, but just one way to formulate it, you could say that what he means is that suffix or abanam lakula means I have the right to take the more lenient of two possibilities. But here, we know that this is neither possibility. Right? That the Gemara says one of the two sets should have Haseva. So, Suffolk Rabbanan Lakula could mean, okay, I have the right to do the easier one. But here, neither one is easier than the other. And to take off both of them is going to completely disappear the din. And that, we know, is not one of the possibilities. So the Ran might just be saying that that's not an instance of Suffolk Rabbanan Lakula. It's not what the words mean. So to recap in a different way, three possible understandings, at least, of what the Ran is saying. It is a tircha, so I need a better answer. Or, if it was just suffix rabbanan lakula, there would be no reason to be machmir, because we don't care if it's easy, we still never are machmir. Or, no, suffix rabbanan lakula never meant this in the first place. Now, the last two might be compatible with each other, because it might be that he's saying that this is not a case of suffix rabbanan lakula, because if it were, then I wouldn't need to be machmer for any reason. So in other words, that could be a compatible statement between a common svar between point two and point three, that this is not really where suffix or rabbanan lakula should be applied in the first place. Because if it were, I wouldn't be machmer for reasons such as no tears. So the fact that we're saying to be machmer, that the Gemara is saying to be machmer, shows you that this is not a good application of Suffolk to Rabbanan Lakula. Okay, Jack, a question?
Curious, based off what we're establishing, the Isser Chatzah, Medindio Raisa, and Isser Gavra, maybe, Medindio Rabbanan.
Yeah, if that's okay, it's just
if that is the case.
Right. It's a popular view among Ephraim.
What would the status be if, let's say, someone that blew the shofar on Shabbos, mm-hmm. they did not, you know, carry the shofar, dalalamas, right. Others around him?
So that's one.
I would say they're.
So that's one example of how it could be relevant. You know, so it's a much longer discussion, so I don't want to get too far afield, but just to whoever pointed, to whatever level it contributes to our understanding of it, that could be related, right? The question of, if you blow shofar on Shabbos when you're not supposed to, is there any mitzvah there at all? And I think it is related, by the way, but it's a much longer discussion. So
why is it a question at all?
So it could be that either you understand that it's got to still be a mitzvah, because, like Rabbi Akiva Eger wrote, for example, because the rabbis don't have the authority to uproot a mitzvah in actuality. It's all about listening to them. It's all about the Gavra. So they can tell you, don't blow a shofar today. But they can't rewrite the Torah and remove it from the Torah. While the other view might say that, no, I disagree with that, and that the rabbis actually have authority that goes beyond the individual, and they can actually remove a mitzvah from the Torah. So I think that conversation, which is much longer, I think it does connect to this, but it's a big segue, it's a big detour to say much more about it. But with that, okay, so with those possibilities, so now let's consider the question that a number of Achronim dealt with, most famously the Mishnah LeMelech, but many others also, that there seems to be a stira in Hilchos Purim. That if you look at the Ran in the Seches Megillah, the beginning of Megillah, on Daf Beis of Daf Be'erif, corresponds to Daf Hei and Gemara over there, that the question comes up regarding next week's calendar, when the 14th of Adar is going to fall out on Friday, and 15th on Shabbos, in an unusual but really not impossible situation. So that complicates things for a lot of reasons. But let's say it wasn't 15th on Shabbos. Let's say it was a normal year. So you have people who live in most of the world in cities that have been unwalled from the days of Yeshua ben Nun. The vast majority of the Jewish world will read the Megillah on the 14th. And walled cities, most prominently Yerushalayim, they read the Megillah on what we call Shushan Purim on the 15th. So what happens, especially because it's tied back to a long time ago in history, you can't just look at a city right now and figure out what its status was from the days of Yeshua ben Nun. So what happens if you have a city that's a Suffolk? You don't know what its story is. So what should you do about that? So there, the Ran says that should read it, quotes the Gaonim, that we can follow the Rov, and we can follow the majority of the world. Like we said, the vast majority of the world reads on the 14th. So if we don't know, so then that seems to be a logical choice. Right, presumably a rov like that would have been good even for Torah law. Right, even for Torah law we follow a rov, and this is an overwhelming rov. And here we're dealing with Din Derabanan, or maybe more than that, Divrei Kabbalah, as we spoke about a little bit, but yeah, even for Torah law a rov works. So that would seem to tilt it to the 14th. And some also add the idea of Ein Ma'avir and Al HaMitzvos, that we take the first mitzvah opportunity, so it's going to come earlier. But Rov is what the Ran brings up here. And that's enough. So many ask that it seems to be a contradiction to what he says in Psachim. Right? On the one hand, he starts to ask the same question, I think. Zach, you sent around the text, I should have it here, to read his exact words. And he does, on one hand, ask the question the same way, but still he's satisfied with a different answer. Right? So his language is, L'inyan ha'yaros ha'musupakos, im heimu k'vnechom ha'mimosu Yeshua ben-nun, olo, horu ha'ga'onim zal, sehol holchen b'hanach ha'rov. The onim paskin that we can follow the rov ha'yaros, sheruban enan mokfos chomimosu Yeshua. the Karim Ben Biyadala. The Ode. Shafilu Tomar Shu Sofek Shakul. So what if you were to say that, forget about Rove, let's say it was 50-50 somehow. So then maybe you'll say, Havale Sofek Shal Devrehem Vila Kula V'nimsa Peturus Mishnehem U'mavatel Mimenu V'vadei Mikra Megillah. So it's interesting language, right? Because on the one hand, it does parallel part of what he says here in Psachim, because he asks the same question, right? And it goes to our previous point of what was the default here. When he said Ipcha, we should have thought something other than what the Gemara says. So what would the default have been? Would it have been to pick one, or would it have been to do nothing? So it's interesting to compare his language there, that he says, you may have thought, okay, Suffolk to Rabbanim Lakula means don't read at all. Treat each day as a Suffolk, and don't do day 14 or day 15. But no, that's not acceptable, because we're going to lose out completely. So what's the conclusion? Right. So if that was all he said, then that would fit more nicely with what he says in Psachim. But the conclusion is different. Because the conclusion is that it should be, in case of Haseba, you have to do both. And in the case of Megillah, he's satisfied with just one. So, does that strike you as a stira? And if so, or I guess if not, either way, so what would the difference be? I mean, if it's a question, how would you answer it? Or if you think it's so obvious, the difference is not a question in the first place. Either way, so what is the difference? And what you maybe have seen is that a number of Achronim take this question up. It's a big question. Most prominently, the Mishnah Lamelech in Hilchos Megillah. His distinction, if you got a chance to see it, is a little bit vague. It's not clear. His explanation requires another explanation. So either way, we could bounce off from the Mishnah Malach as to try to explain the difference. But what would you say? So with the Mishnah Malach, without the Mishnah Malach, either way. So does it strike you as a difference? Does it require more of an explanation? What would you say? How would you address? So when it comes to Megillah, he's satisfied with one day. When it comes to Talikosos, you have to do all four. Now just to add to the question a little bit, and this isn't something that is so often pointed out, but sometimes, you know, a Rishon will seem to contradict himself because he's really explaining just the landscape. So he's saying, okay, here's what's going on over there. So that would lead to this svara. And he's not necessarily reflecting his own opinion. So sometimes when there's a stira, let's say Rashi, for example, it's often the answer why Rashi in one place says one thing, in another place says another thing. So very often it's because he's explaining one day in the Gemara here and another day in the Gemara there. So it ends up the two statements by themselves are contradicting each other, but it's because he's explaining what's going on. So here it's just interesting to note that this conclusion of the Ran is not necessarily the obvious conclusion. And in fact, the Shulchan Aruch disagrees. Right? So if you had a chance to see the Psak in Shulchan Aruch, right, what did Shulchan Aruch say in such a situation? Of a Safek, a Yoros, Mekafiz, Choma? Read on both days. So that does sharpen the point a little bit, just to be aware that it's not like the Ran is being given a foregone conclusion and is explaining it, but there could have been a different conclusion on this point. That's also something to pay attention to, especially because the truth is one could have thought that why does this have to bother me? The answer is really pretty much straight there in the Ran. That if we take the default question to be that we can't be makel by both. We cannot apply Sofek Derabanan Lekula to get us out of it completely. Because that's an unacceptable reading of what Sofek Derabanan Lekula means. So That's not an option. You could have thought so, but the Ron's telling us in both places it's not an option. You could have thought something to Rabban Lakula means don't do a seva by any of the kosos. You could have thought it meant don't read Megillah on either day. And in both cases, we'll tell you it's not an acceptable answer. You can't apply something to Rabban Lakula to get rid of something. So then we'll say, okay, so then let's consider other possibilities. We don't want to get rid of it completely. So then, for Hasebo, let's do one set out of the two. So to that, he says, no, that doesn't work either, because there's no logic to that. And maybe that requires more explanation, as we'll see. For example, if you got a chance to see Rav Akiva Eiger, he discusses exactly what he means by that point. But maybe that's why you can't pick one when it comes to Dalet Kosos. But there's the difference with Megillah, right? If you phrase it that way, so Megillah's pretty different, right? Because maybe they're following the same path. That my first question is, let's be Mako by all of them, and just not do the whole thing. And we'll say, no, you can't do that because you're going to get rid of the din completely. Okay, so then let's pick one. So the Ron says, no, Dalet Kosos, you can't pick one. There's no logic to pick one over the other. But is that true when it comes to Megillah? It isn't true, right? There is a logic. Right? The logic is that it's an overwhelming rov to go with your Dalet. So if that's the path that you take, so then that seems to be a pretty straightforward distinction between the two. Zach, you look surprised.
Yeah, I thought this was
all...
With
limited facial features, you can still... Sorry? Right?
I thought this was all within his theoretical that it's 50-50. I think he says originally...
Right, that's true. Okay, that's true. You're saying that even if it's shuckle, yeah. Right? Except that still he's asking the question differently. He was saying that even if it was shuckle, that sounds like when he brings in that point, what he's saying is that, well, because there is a rove, you might as well pick this day with Humra. He's saying that even if it was shakul 50-50 on each day, still that wouldn't allow us to just drop each day, because that would have left that. So when he introduces the shakul part, I think that's where he's going with it.
I thought he was saying because it comes first, and then Mishnah.
Okay, but he's saying with the Ron, before you get to anyone else, he's saying, is the Ron necessarily inconsistent? Right, now what's interesting, like we started off with, is that it's not the path he takes himself. Right? He doesn't start off saying, let's just knock them both out, and then say, like, if that had been his language, if he'd said, well, let's not do anything. No, that can't be. We can't use Suffolk Rabbanu Lakula to wipe something out completely. All right, let's pick one. So, no, we can't pick one. It's illogical. So then it would have fit better. Happens to be that his language goes in the other direction here. And he starts off with picking one or the other and saying, no, we can't pick one or the other. So then... let's just do neither. No, can't do that as well. But on the surface, this does seem to be one of the major distinctions. But nonetheless, so the Mishnah Malach asks the question, is not satisfied with that. Maybe for Zach's point, that because he also neutralizes it by saying, even if it had been shakul, this would have been the conclusion. So, Jack, you want to address that?
Yeah, I think just something that Zach and I discussed in Seder. The question, how interlinked is the day that you read Megillah with the actual Kriyas Megillah versus the interlinking between Haseba and Dalet Kosos? And we posited that maybe by Megillah they're not as interlinked.
Okay, that is a great point. All right, so now we'll try to discuss, I think in the interest of not confusing anybody any more than necessary, because it's a confusing topic. So this is a topic that, as you can see, a lot of Achronim get involved in. I am probably not going to mention too many names at the risk of, especially it's a Purim idea, they should say everything Davar B'Shem Omer and bring Geula. It's actually learned out from Purim. I don't want to neglect that idea. But I also don't want to be any more confusing than necessary. So I'm happy to provide some of the more direct Makaris if anybody wants to read what some Achronim say inside. But as we're discussing these Sfaras right now, I'm probably going to try not to overwhelm you with who says what, but just to mention a few names. So the Mishnah Malach, as you've seen, Rav Huttner has a piece about this that was printed in the Sefer Zikaron for Rav Hutner, Sefer Karl Maran Balapach Yitzchak. The Chassam Sofer has a tshuva about this. Rav Kiva Eiger, as we mentioned, there are many different achronim who take up this issue and try to reconcile the two, and you can look inside to see exactly who says which and one of the distinctions that we might talk about. So what about, let's go with what Jack is saying. So is there a difference between the way Yudalit and Tesvav are related to each other and the way the Dalit Kosos are related to each other? Very possibly yes. Right? And that very possibly might just be interesting for us, because especially holding in both Pesachim and Purim right now at the same time, so we're interested in exploring the relationships that these didn't have. But also, could that help us with an answer here? Right? Especially if the idea is that somehow the takana of Hesebe by Dalikosos is more vulnerable to being undone by just picking one or the other, if that's what he means. While Purim seems to be less vulnerable, so is there a reason for that within each mitzvah? Right, let's say you were to phrase the question this way, that if the Ran is really saying that we can't undo the takana here, and to skip the mitzvah would be undoing the takana, but even to randomly pick one or the other would also do violence to the takana, that somehow to just, which is how some achronim understand him, that we also be undermining the takana here of Hesebe by Dalikosos if we just picked one set without any reason. But it's not true for Purim. So what difference is there between how Yudalit and Tesvav relate to each other and between how the Dalikosos relate to each other? So that probably is a productive path. So what would you... how would you articulate a difference? Yeah?
I think it seems that like Shushan Purim serves as more of like a hitter.
Okay.
In the sense that we have the message of Purim that we were safe from our enemies, but Shushan Purim adds the component that we got to kill even more of our enemies. So that's
okay,
what
one,
I
think one way to put it. But especially because of the... some implications that I'm going to just lumpify it a little bit more, right? That there's reason to understand that Purim is really on the 14th, and that the 15th is an extension, and that at the core, everyone is really connected to the 14th, and that therefore it's safer to say that that accomplishes enough of what we need to do for Purim. And to worry that maybe it's a 15th city, that, okay, Suffolk, the Rabban Lakula, we don't have to worry so much. But when it comes to the Dalikosos, so maybe they're one unit, and there is Haseba somewhere, and that if we don't have Haseba in the right place, so then maybe we're missing what the Haseba is, perhaps, and there's really no logic to one over the other. While when it comes to Purim, it's easier to say that really the 14th is the day and the takana would be accomplished there. But when it comes to Dalikosos, maybe that's not as clearly true. Perhaps. All right?
Maybe you could say, in light of what we've been discussing previously, the different rabbinic nature of the takana as regarding Kriyas Megillah and the Seva by Arbakosa are inherently different. Because when it came to the Tekanis of Kriyas Megillah, that's well understood by all Jews. And the fact that you're skipping on the 15th due to Suffolk, that doesn't look as, you know, damning against the position, the status of their allies. But when it comes to Arbakosa and Haseba, which already has an inherent difficulty that is not connected, it's difficult to connect with on an emotional level, then we have a heightened rabbinic concern that it's going to get uprooted. But there we specifically say don't skip on any aspect of it whatsoever.
Wow. It's a very creative suggestion. I mean, I don't know if we see it in the source itself, but it's a very interesting idea that maybe there's all a sliding scale, and that the need to be machmir, especially for the concern of a zilzel when it comes to a drabanan, isn't always the same. Now, it's interesting, actually, to try to plug that into the first answer that the Ran doesn't like as much, saying that maybe, in general, it's not a reduction of respect for rabbinic authority if you're makel on a suffix. If you don't know and you're lenient, okay, so that's not considered rebellious. But, practically speaking, if it's really easy to be machmir, and you're choosing not to, so then maybe there's some level of rebellion there. That even though it's not rebellious not to do something that you're not sure you have to do, but if it's really something you could have done pretty easily, maybe that's more of a concern. So it's interesting to bring that into the discussion. You know, should we have some kind of a subjective, qualitative assessment of how much is a disrespect to Chazal in terms of your attitude of cool or not? In other words, strictly speaking, to be makel on a suffik is not disrespectful to Chazal, but if it was really easy to be machmir, maybe it is a little bit. Hi.
I think another something to consider is just in halakha in general of who is obligated to read on the 14th versus the 15th. It's very much dependent on the individual's personal circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the Mishnah in Megillah talks about ben krok shalach l'ir, ben ir shalach l'krok. Like, you could be a resident of, you know, an old city one day and then an un-old city the next day. So in that regard, your halakha would change, and you can go back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like on Idalic Kostos, it's not that way at all. Meaning everybody has the same exact fee of on the same night. There's not much wiggle room in terms of that. Like it can't just change. Like, you know.
Okay, that point is very significant. And it's interesting, Sir Rav Huttner, for example, does focus on that, but probably to make a little bit of a different point. But he says something. What do you notice about that? Let's say, for example, and this is totally in a lot of other details, but let's posit the following. Okay? Let's posit that somebody read the Megillah on the 14th because he was a city dweller, and at some point went to Yerushalayim, and ended up there on the 15th, right, without getting into all the complexity of when exactly, but let's posit this much. He could find himself actually obligated in reading in both. Right? You know, when I was in yeshivas, we did to get 2 days of Purim, to move at the right time. So you could end up chayiv in both. So what does that tell us that's relevant here? So what Huttner emphasizes is that we see that when it comes to reading on the 14th or the 15th, it's not that there's one obligation and if you get it done somewhere, you're good. But that it's a function of your being in each place at each time. And theoretically, you may end up with two obligations. Theoretically, maybe you may end up with no obligations. There were those who didn't like Purim who tried to get out of it completely and schedule their travel plans to have no obligation. So it's not that there's one floating obligation and we've got to figure out where it lands. It's about your being here or your being there, you are or you aren't obligated. So it could have been more reasonable to say, okay, I have a suffix each time and they are separate from each other. And there could be a case to say, okay, so on the 14th I have a suffix and that should be makel. And on the 15th, I should have a suffix, I should be making. But we don't want to say that because we don't want to let you off the hook completely from hearing the Megillah. But there's theoretically a stronger basis to say, let's look at every chiyuv by itself, and they don't necessarily affect each other. Which you see from the fact that you started with, that you could end up with two chiyuvim. You could end up chayiv on the 14th and chayiv on the 15th. And not be din suffik, right? Not because you're being machmir suffik. You could be the same individual, maybe fully obligated on the 14th and fully obligated on the 15th by moving around. When it comes to dalikosos, the nature of the way it's presented, the two are connected to each other. Because that's the way the Gemara tells us that there's one set that requires a seva, and we don't know which one it is. So therefore, if I take a stand on either one and say, okay, this is what I'm going to pick, so at least conceptually, I am saying something about the other set. I'm saying that the other set doesn't have an obligation. But there's no logic to that. So it's not a viable position to take. So perhaps, as Rufotner, that's the difference. That there's no way to pick one set or the other without indicating something about the other set. And that's inherently an illogical thing to do. Well, when it comes to where you read the Megillah, when you read the Megillah, there's nothing in that decision that has to affect the other one. You could be, it's theoretically possible you're chayiv on neither day, and it's theoretically possible you're chayiv on both days. So to make a decision on either one doesn't say anything about the other. So we can look at that one discreetly. But when it comes to Dalakosos, the Gemara tells us it's one or the other. So any stance you're going to take is going to impact on the other. Okay, so I think we should recap. I don't know if everyone's following or not. Very complicated topics. They're going to affect the Kol Torah Kula and Purim and Pesach. So we'll break here and we'll recap. Then we'll continue next time. But hopefully we got a good chunk on the table just to appreciate what exactly some of the issues here are. So just to recap what we spoke about. So we saw that the Ran, before even looking at any other Rans, but the Ran on Ardaf asks a question. Why is it that the Gemara says all four? That you could have said Ipcha, and we weren't 100% sure what Ipcha would mean. Would it mean do none or do one set? And first he quotes the approach other Rishonim have, that there's no Tircha, so you might as well. And then he says a different reason, that to do one or the other makes no sense, and to do neither negates the whole takana. So we tried to figure out first, assuming that the answers are not just contributing to each other, but are arguing about something, what could they be arguing about? And we saw three possible approaches. One is that it's a local issue here, about how you assess Dalakosos, and how you assess the Tircha involved. The first answer said there's no Tircha, the second answer said there is a Tircha. And that question is relevant beyond here also, because if we're assuming that this is a point, that if there's no tircha you should do it, then we're going to have to wonder, so when is that true, when is it not true, what's called a tircha, is it about money, is it about devotion, is it about effort, etc. The second approach is to say it's not about that question of tircha. We can all see the tircha here as equal. The question is, does there exist a rule that even when you say something to Rabban Lakula, if there's no tircha, you should still be machmir? First opinion says yes, and the second opinion, the Ran, is saying no, that even when there's a suffering to Rabban Lakula, there's no reason to be machmir even if there's no tircha. So that could be a fundamental question of what does suffering to Rabban Lakula mean? Is it just we're chill here and you don't have to, but if you can, great? Or no, fundamentally, it's the kula, and there's no reason to be machmir, even if there's no tircha. And we mentioned one possible path to that approach. If you talk about the chefetz gavra distinction, it could take you along those lines. And the third approach was that the question is this even a good application of safek d'rabbanan l'kula? That the first opinion is saying, yes, it is, but there's no tircha, so you might as well do it. And maybe the Ran is saying, no, this is not the kind of case where you say safek d'rabbanan l'kula because of the illogic of picking one and the consequences of picking none and saying that it should be knocked out completely. So with those possibilities in mind, we then started considering, is there a contradiction between what he says here and what he says in Megillah? That there, the question of, if you have a city, you're not sure if it's walled from the days of Yeshua ben Nun, should read on the 14th and the 15th. He quotes the Gaonim, who say that you should pick the 14th because that's the general rove. And then he says, either way, that you couldn't have taken approach of Safik Rabban Lakuli here to knock out both days because that would be getting rid of Takana completely. Up until that point, he's consistent with what he says here in Pesachim. But the conclusion is a little surprising because in Pesachim, the conclusion is you have to be machmir for all. And in Megillah, he's satisfied with just the 14th, which is all the more so interesting because the Shulchan Aruch disagreed. So it's not the only conclusion you could have come to. But that's where there seems to be a disparity. So we talked about how to reconcile that, how the Mishnah Melech and the other Achronim raised the question. we noted first that maybe it's not as much of a contradiction, because if the whole question really is that, okay, Naniach, you can't wipe out all the possibilities, but with Dal Kosos, there's no logic to pick one or the other. With Megillah, there is. That does seem to be a difference, and Zach points out, well, the fact is it seems to have maybe knocked out that difference by saying, even if it was equal, it'd still say this. Okay. Then we considered some other possible approaches, such as, is there a difference between how the Dal Kosos relate to each other and how the 2 days of Mikra Megillah relate to each other? And one approach is to say that really everybody is a 14th person. It's just an extension to have a Megillah reading on the 15th under special circumstances, but they're all Me'ikr Hadin, the same mitzvah, so that's different than the relationship between the two sets of Kosos. Or the point that we ended off on, that Rav Huttner emphasized, built on what Jack was saying, that there is a fundamental difference in how they relate to each other, because theoretically, when it comes to Purim, somebody might be obligated in both days or obligated in no days, not mitzvah suffik, but just because it's affected by where he is at the moment. So the 2 days are not necessarily linked to each other. The fact that you did everything on the 14th, kedasu kedin, but now you end up in Yerushalayim on the 15th, so you may have to do it all over again, shows that whatever policy you take by one day doesn't impact the policy you take by the other day. But when it comes to the Dal Kosos, the Gemara tells us it's not that way. The Gemara tells us it's only one of the two. We just don't know which one it is. So whichever policy you take is going to be casting a judgment on the other set. And since that's inherently illogical, there's no reason to go one or the other, so therefore it's not a viable approach. There are many, many other distinctions, and we have to also illustrate how this affects the Shemitah year. We haven't done that yet, so we certainly have a little more to add about this. So probably on Sunday we'll try to do that. Tomorrow we'll try to talk about the Truma and Zacher. And right now we'll daven the Mincha. Everyone should stay safe and healthy. Do we have a volunteer to daven for us? The volunteers? Jack, I'm taking it away. Ashri Yishvi B'Yisefa. Good job.